Welcome to La Liga Weekly, where Barcelona put in another imperious performance and are now 5 points clear at the top. Here, the word imperious means ground out their sixth 1-0 win of the campaign with a 14th clean sheet from 18 league matches, as Pedri scored with one of their three shots on target against Girona. I've come to the conclusion that Xavi isn't a Johan Cruyff regen. He's in fact George Graham and Giovanni Trapattoni rolled into one. Crucially, they scored one more goal than Real Madrid, who couldn't hit the back of the net and can't even get a player sent off, no matter how hard they try. Elsewhere, the notorious snowflake Iñaki Williams missed another match. That's two in 7 years now. And speaking of rare occurrences, Youssef En-Nesyri scored not one, but two actual league goals in a single match. And if you count them up, that makes two for the season. Maybe not having a maniac screaming from the sidelines for the entire match was a positive for Sevilla, but who can say? Getafe were the big losers at the bottom. It's obviously taken that Elche lost, but Cadiz, Celta Vigo and Valladolid all won. And you know what? Quietly, without any fuss, over at Valencia, Reino Gattuso is doing a terrible job and they're going to get relegated unless they sort themselves out. We'll have a roundup of all of the exciting transfer news from Spain. Hope you enjoyed it. And if you're lucky, I will reprise my "the transfer window should be abolished in La Liga" argument from the Patreons pod last week. Thank you for listening. Thank you to all the Patreons for their support as well. In short, my argument is that there are such strict financial spending regulations on Spanish clubs, they're already protected from that. So it's like a double whammy to have a transfer window as well. So when a new coach comes in, it's only got until the end of August to get everything done. And then they get another go in January. But by then, all the money is largely spent up. So nothing happens really in January, or very little happens. You know, the odd loan here and the odd underpriced move here and there. And the only club that spent probably the biggest was so far is Espanyol, because they lost Raúl de Tomás on the last day of the window, so they didn't have any time to spend. Had a new manager, and so it just seems to be a totally unnecessary restriction on the club's ability to sort their squads out. Given that they're so restricted anyway in what they can do, why? What's to stop them doing it in October, November? Doesn't make any sense, does it? So that's in short my argument. We'll have a look and see if anything has happened in the transfer window. It hasn't, basically.
No.
Terry, slightly shorter goals this week. I must say 5-1 nils out of the 9 games so far. We had 5-1 nils last week as well. It's a bit of a theme, the 1-0 going on at the moment. And 7 teams had an XG of less than 1 of the 18 teams that have played so far. But Barcelona keep on doing it. It's this enigmatic thing about them, isn't it? Where we saw them play in the Champions League and we came to the conclusion they couldn't defend. And yet their defensive record is actually remarkable. They're going to break records if they carry on like this.
Oh, it's incredible. 14 clean sheets in 18 games. I mean, they've only conceded 6, and 3 of those were in one game against Real Madrid. I think I looked at the other teams that have scored. Espanyol away at home is the only goal they've conceded this season. I think that was a penalty, was it? If I'm not wrong. Espanyol at home, Osasuna away, and Real Sociedad away are the only other teams that have scored against Barcelona. So, and if you looked at it, I mean, you from afar without watching the games, you would think they've been absolutely fantastic defensively. They've been good. They've had some issues in terms of who is the back four. Most teams now are getting issues in terms of the amount of games that they're playing. It's beginning to catch up now, isn't it, with the World Cup. Straight back into action. We were all pleased to see, you know, the return of domestic football. Then all of a sudden you're seeing teams play every 3 or 4 days. One or two players are picking up injuries and suspensions now. So they're having to rotate the squads, not just Barcelona, but the teams that can are trying their best to rotate it. We're suddenly realising now the accumulation of matches are going to be a problem. So they're changing the back four on a regular basis. The one constant is the goalkeeper. And he's the biggest reason, because I'm being honest, I'm watching Barcelona play and they do concede chances. They do concede in some games very good chances that should be taken. And again, that was the case in this match. You know, Girona had some really good opportunities, one-on-ones and stuff like that. And Ter Stegen makes a save. It's almost becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy now. When teams are playing Barcelona and they get through one-on-one, they don't believe, whoever it is, they don't believe they're going to score, because Barcelona got this sensational defensive record. And when you see the players go through and they've got just the goalkeeper to beat, Ter Stegen makes the save, but you're thinking, it's a good save. It was a dangerous situation for Barcelona, but it was a dreadful finish. You know, they're just hitting it and hoping, and it's almost as lacking confidence in terms of, we can't score against Barcelona. And I think over the years, that does happen to teams where they have this defensive record and teams actually start to believe they're going to be hard to score against. But they do concede chances. But it's an extraordinary record. 6 goals conceded in 18 games. And, you know, in 14 of those, they kept clean sheets. So it's, what I would say is the defence starts from the front. So all the front players that are playing and have played really do work hard to close down high up the pitch. So that first line of defence starts high up the pitch. Midfield players back it up as well. It's positive pressing from De Jong and Busquets, Pedri and Gavi. So it does make it harder to actually break through to get at the back four. And more often than not, the only way to do that is a ball over the top, because the fullbacks of Barcelona, they've pushed in as well. And it's quite traditional. That's how you play against Barcelona. But teams are not taking the chances. And you know, teams, even like Girona, had 2 or 3 really good chances, but didn't take them. So it's really hard to explain the success, other than the way I've just done it, and the fact that they do roar around the pitch, closing people down, great attitude. You know, players with quality working hard to get the ball back. When they win it, they're in the attacking half. So that's the style, I think, from Barcelona, that Xavi's prepared to risk a long ball over the top or, you know, stuff like that. But they're defending set pieces better, I mean, far better than they've done in a long time. So that's credit to him. If I was looking at the team in general, not so much the team at the weekend, but in general, I think they're a bit bigger than they have been in the past. Even one of their smaller players, Jules Koundé, makes them better defensively from set pieces as well. So you chuck in Araujo and Christensen, and even Balde is bigger than Jordi Alba, I think. Not a lot, but a little bit bigger. De Jong's a decent size. Busquets is a decent size. Lewandowski, when he plays, comes back and helps out. So I think they're better defensively at set pieces. But it was a tough performance. It was a tough watch, I have to be honest. I must admit, in the second half, until they scored the goal, I didn't see a way through. I thought Girona were defending well. They weren't allowing Barcelona too many attempts at goal. Barcelona would it was complicated. Lucien Dembélé pretty early on with an injury. That's an accumulation of the games being played since the World Cup. We're going to see this, I'm pretty sure, more and more. And we do wonder why managers rotate. I think we're beginning to realise now that they have to. You know, particularly with players that break, that have this long-standing issue of being a little bit more fragile than others in terms of their body and how it works. And when you look with hindsight now, you probably look at it and think Dembélé is one of those players that you would have to treat carefully in order to make sure that he's not playing every 3 days.
Too badly, has he, recently? Given that you know his first contract at Barca was ruined, wasn't it, by injuries. They've managed him through, or he's done okay, you know, so fingers crossed. You know, he's no Iñaki Williams, obviously, but... has there ever been a goalkeeper who's been named player of the season? If Barcelona season finished now, there's a strong case that Ter Stegen is the player of the season, isn't he? The most influential player. I mean, they'd probably give it to Lewandowski, I would guess, wouldn't they, for the goals? But that's just bias.
That normally happens. It's like man of the match, isn't it? You know, someone can score a goal, have an average game. I knew that when I was playing. I thought I played well some games and you get a 4 in the paper because I didn't score. Then other games you play and you think didn't play particularly well, but I scored. I've got a couple and you get a 9. That's how it works. So the strikers get the attention. Even every man in a match is, I'm not surprised because I'm used to it, but there are a lot of cases where Marc-André Ter Stegen has been there. He's good at what... defending the one-on-ones, he's really good. Yeah. That's where a lot of the chances are. He makes the right decisions. He holds his nerve. He makes the attackers confused, if you like. Because
it's a different skill set, isn't it, for a goalkeeper at a top club than a goalkeeper at a club that's going to be soaking up a lot of pressure. I always thought that with Casillas and Valdez, you know, in two great goalkeepers who wouldn't necessarily have been your first choice for a team that's going to get battered and be conceding a lot of balls into the box.
Crosses into the box, exactly. I agree with you. There's many a time I played in a game either way and the goalkeeper's been man of the match and they've lost 4-0. Or you've lost 4-0. You've beaten a team 4-0 and the goalkeeper's had a blinder because he's had 15 shots to save. And if you're picking the best player in that team, despite the fact Your goal is conceded for, or the goalkeeper you're playing against has conceded for. He made six or seven other really good saves, just the fact they're busy. But these goalkeepers you're talking about, it must be so easy to switch off. They really, and I'm sure they have their mechanism, their way of dealing with it, because you can't be focused, concentrated for every second of the game when you're being, idle at the back. Nothing's going on, nothing's coming back. I guess with someone like Ter Stegen, he's quite busy anyways, and he will be out of his penalty box. So he tries to keep active in the fact that at times he almost is like an outfield player, where he pushes upside and he's always shouting because he wants the ball, which can be another reason why we've seen so many teams not scoring goals, because they're all so keen in going back to their goalkeeper rather than passing the ball forward. So that keeps a goalkeeper more active now than maybe it used to, when you couldn't, you, no one went back to the goalkeeper unless you had to, or unless you were wasting time. So I think goalkeepers now in general is a slightly different mindset in the fact that they are still involved in the game if they want to be.
Yeah.
And Ter Stegen does, doesn't he? So
Yeah.
he wants to be getting the ball and passing it. And, I actually, I think by a long way, he's the best with the ball at his feet. And now, I know he's always been a good goalkeeper, but I think now he's proven to be fantastic keeper,
Yeah.
really is. And he's battled with Neuer for the German number one, has always been a given that Neuer plays. But I have to be honest, in the last couple of seasons, I think Ter Stegen is the all-round keeper. He's good at shot stopping, great at dealing with crosses, and he's a two-footed ball playing goalkeeper that really winds me up.
It's interesting. It's interesting for goalkeepers in international football sometimes, isn't it? Because I was struck by Slovenia, obviously with Oblak and Handanovic, this sort of ludicrous position
Oh,
where they had two world-class
yeah.
goalkeepers in this relatively small, football nation. That because if Ter Stegen had been born somewhere else, if he'd been English, how
Yeah.
many caps would he have won now?
Yeah.
He'd be pushing 100 caps, I guess, wouldn't he? I
Yeah.
don't know how many he's won for Germany, but not many. Which is just unlucky that his career, that also that he's a bit younger than Neuer, so Neuer became this sort of legendary figure. I don't watch the two of them. I don't watch Neuer enough
No.
to make a final judgment. But there's a, like you say, there must be a strong case that Ter Stegen should be Germany's number one. But there you go. On the subject of goalkeepers who had good games, Terry Ramiro for Real Sociedad. Couple of really good saves. I mean, I would argue that Real Madrid didn't. It's not exactly a mountain of chances for Real Madrid. I don't have an awful. I'm not sort of weeping for them because it was the best performance I've ever seen from a goalkeeper. He didn't make 10 saves, but Real Sociedad, it's a good result, isn't it? For a good team, isn't it? You look at them,
Yeah.
you think, oh, they're a well organized team, aren't they? Well drilled, good, admirable team.
And phenomenal in terms of squad depth as well,
Because
because
about 10 players injured, don't
they had a lot of players and
they?
important players missing through injury. And you're looking at a normal season with Real Sociedad going into that game with the Bernabeu against Real Madrid. We have a number of players missing, a lot. They'd have no chance. They'd have no belief. They wouldn't have the capability because they'd be, stretching down into the lowest rank of professional player at the club. But if any single player that comes into Real Sociedad's team looks at home, and that doesn't appear. So you're looking at, I'm missing David Silva and some other players, and thinking, but the Robert Navarro comes on it and does exactly the same type of the job of the player that he's filling in for. And the squad depth, because of their success with the young players at the club, is phenomenal. I mean, you're looking at a game last night where they ended up with Zubimendi at centre back and Zubeldia, who is officially a holding midfielder but hasn't been able to get in there because Zubimendi has been so good. Zubeldia has found a position at the heart of defence. He isn't the biggest, he's strong, he has all the attributes you need to be a holding midfield player. So when he first went to centre back alongside Lionel Mandje, you're thinking, oh, I don't know whether this is going to work. Aritz Elizondo might be slightly better. Elizondo is now playing as a fullback. Zubeldia has gone in at centre back. Elizondo goes off. So Zubeldia now plays at right back. Zubimendi goes to centre back. And this is all against the Real Madrid team that played well. Yet somehow the Real Sociedad players still had that belief that they could get something from the game. And they still had that belief to play their style of football at the Bernabeu against an impressive Real Madrid. So we talked about the Copa del Rey midweek, where Real Sociedad, they went down to 10 men just before half-time and still had chances. They went down 1-0 to Barcelona and they still had chances to get back on level terms. And we said, and I said, that we can't criticise Barcelona for not winning by more than the one goal, because Real Sociedad, it's what we want. Real Sociedad are a genuine, bona fide, top 3-4 team. Yeah. So why should we expect Barcelona to thrash them 3 or 4 nil like the old days when they used to knock everybody over in La Liga and just play against Real Madrid and Atletico and Sevilla maybe? And it's the same for Real Madrid in this game. And Real Madrid, they had some players missing as well. You look at, they were depleted at the back. Camavinga had to play left back after switching to left back in the midweek game as well, in the Copa del Rey against Atletico. And that was a reasonable success, but he doesn't get forward in the normal fashion of a Roberto Carlos. He's not going to do that. He concentrated and focused on playing as a left back. But Real Madrid, I think they were, it's hard to explain how Barcelona are keeping all these clean sheets, and it's hard to explain how there was no goals in this game. Soloff had a really good opportunity in the first half, didn't make contact with a cross. Takekubo had one or two attempts as well. They had some good situations around Sociedad, but Real Madrid did create a lot of chances. And Ramiro, I think, is a smashing goalkeeper, pulled off some fantastic saves. And Real Madrid possibly were guilty of not making the most of some situations and guilty of missing chances that they, you know, for instance, they didn't hit the target on. So yeah, I thought it was a really good 0-0. And it wasn't until, actually, I don't know why I didn't realise there was so few goals again. Just watching all the games. And then it was, when you mentioned it, I looked and, oh my goodness, me, yeah, just enjoying the football. And you know, I didn't realise that this was another game, another 0-0, where the goals are hard to come by in La Liga this week. And yet in this game, it could easily have been 2-2, 3-2. But the fact that Ramiro in particular was so good was the biggest reason why, I think. One, where he goes down, he gets, I think Vinicius tries to dink him. And most goalkeepers go down low, he somehow went down low, but reacted, read it, and had an arm high above with strongly palmed it away. That was probably the pick of the bunch, because it was technically a really, really good save. So excellent work from Real Sociedad. Real Madrid will be frustrated that they didn't turn their, I think, dominance. They were the better team, and, you know, had more attempts at goal, more chances, and more possession. But it was never going to be easy for Real Madrid and Chelsea's team against a really, they were excellent.
I'll ask you about Zubimendi. It's 23. I don't want to keep selling all the good players from La Liga. They don't need to sell, because I think they're reasonably well off, as you say. That this brilliant youth production means that they've got squad depth. They sold Isak for a real bonus, 60 million euros from their point of view. Not bad business from Newcastle's point of view. How much would it cost to get Zubimendi out, and what level?
I think it's about 50, 60 again, I think.
Yeah.
And there'd be the buyout clause. Why would you, you wouldn't do a deal?
Yeah.
I wouldn't do a deal if I was Real Sociedad. I'd insist that a club pay all of the money in one go and pay the buyout clause. And also, I think there was speculation and rumours that Arsenal made a 50 million bid, and he turned it down in this window, because I think he senses what's going on at La Real. And that's the other pull there. A lot of these young players, most of them come through a local that want to play for Real Sociedad. Yeah. And it's their ambition, it's their dream, and they're fulfilling that. And they're playing for a really good team, for a really good manager in a lovely stadium, a fantastic football club. There will come a time where money talks, unfortunately, and the player will realise that, you know, I'm going to quadruple my salary if I go to the Premier League. He's a super player. But in saying that, if he is linked with anybody, and Barcelona and Real Madrid have the money, they'll both buy it as well. He's that good. So I think there will be genuine competition. Barcelona would love to have him as a replacement for Busquets, long-term replacement. And I think Real Madrid would find he's sufficient quality to play for them as well. They might not need him as much with Camavinga, Tchouaméni. But I think that, you know, if he was available at the buyout, then I think that those two teams might get involved in the bidding as well.
Right, let's talk about Iñaki Williams, or the absence of Iñaki Williams, shall we? Celta Vigo 1, Athletic 0, so they missed him. I mean, it's barely a chance in this game. Iago Aspas, though, he's still got quality when it came down to it. The weekly moan about VAR and handball, I've got to say, first minute of the game, isn't it? 30 seconds in, Carlos Perez scores what looks like an absolute belter. The place goes crazy. And then it turns out that as he challenged for the ball somewhere near halfway, wasn't it, before he ran through?
Aerial challenge, wasn't it?
So he gets a nudge from the defender, doesn't he, as he's jumping. And so therefore the ball does flick off his arm as it's dropping to the ground. But he hasn't moved his arm to the ball. He has been shoved, not a foul, because you're allowed to challenge physically.
Yeah.
So they go up, the defender gives him a shove, it flicks off his arm, he goes through, scores a great goal, 30 seconds in, no goal. We settle into what becomes a 1-0 later on. Crucial win for Celta Vigo. But Iñaki Williams' record is quite remarkable, isn't it? Now, in that season, I just looked it up, 2015-16, that he last missed a game. He actually had an injury hit season. He fractured a leg in that season, and he had a couple of spells out. So at that point, I can't remember, we might have been saying, oh, he's got a bit of an injury problem, this fella. Extraordinary, not far off 7 years to not miss
Arsene league. Wenger, still manager of Arsenal, Leicester were champions of the Premier League, was the last time he missed a game. I saw it that way. It's ridiculous. I can just go back to that Carlos Perez goal. We all accept it now, don't we? Because when you saw the replay and the commentator, can't remember it was, oh, it's a clear handball. I actually thought, oh, yeah, it is. And then I'm thinking, well, no, it's not, but we accept because it's hit his arm.
Yeah,
we accept it's going to be disallowed.
Yeah,
and he had no idea. If it didn't hit his arm, it would have hit the defender's arm. They were banged together, weren't they? Yeah. So he was trying to probably chest it down or something. It was quite high. He was jumping up to control it. If it didn't hit his arm, it was going to hit the defender's arm behind him. That wouldn't have been given as handball if it didn't. You know, something had happened after that. So I thought, no, don't toe the line. It didn't mean that handball. It was a brilliant run, brilliant strike.
The VAR has chosen to go back and look at that, haven't they? They've obviously thought, oh, hang on, here's a chance to disallow a goal.
Yeah.
I'll shut up all those screaming fans.
Exactly. And I accepted it. Now I think that, no, don't accept it. Well, we've got no choice but to accept it. But regarding Iñaki, it's incredible. I mean, to not be injured, not be ill, not be suspended, not to be playing that bad where you need to be left out. I mean, I did think there was an element of no manager was going to leave him out. No manager was going to be the one to end the run.
And could have done with the rest of points. Yeah.
Or he hasn't scored for six games. I've got to make a change. He has been on the bench, but he always comes on. But more often than not, out of all these games, he's started them. It's an incredible achievement. And this, I think, by all accounts, that he's going to be fit for the next game. So it was only a slight niggle. A lot of people said, put him on the bench, you just put him on for the last minute. Or take him off after 1 minute. You've got five subs just to keep the run going. But then it becomes artificial, doesn't it? Yeah. This is a genuine...
This is real, isn't it?
Record that we can rightly applaud and commend to play. Up front as well, where you're on the thick end of physical challenges. As quick as he is, never to pull up with a hamstring or a thigh muscle, to never roll your ankle, to never have stiffness in terms of body aches where you've played and three days later you're playing another game. And it's fantastic achievement. Malaga, I think, wasn't it, in 2016, April? So it's almost 7 years was the last time he missed the game or came off injured. It's ridiculous. It's incredible to think you've never been booked and
sent off. He's come off injured before, though, hasn't he? And I remember thinking, oh, this could be it. This could be the run. But but then he RoboCop is back out there next time, isn't he? But so there we are.
They missed him in this game, actually. They did miss him. I know he does get criticism. It's the fact he misses maybe too many chances. We're never really sure where his best position is. We know he's a player with blinding pace. But in this game, they missed him. I thought Celta were better in this game. Aspas, that's 9 goals this year for Celta Vigo again in 18. So he's 1-2 again. I think he got 18 last season. He's on course to get 18 again. So it just goes to show how important he is for Celtic. And it was a fine finish. Typical Aspas. Gets away, scores with his right foot, but gets away from the defender. Danny Vivian holds him off and tucks it away for a massively important win for Carvajal and his team. And Celta, one of those teams this week that had that important win in the bottom, you know, one of the teams in the bottom half had that important win.
Yeah. Atletico won. Good win away to Osasuna, isn't it? Always, you know, it's got to be a good win if you win away to Osasuna, of course. And Saul, a little bit of a forgotten man, isn't it? It's got absolute cracking.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, looking at Saul? I mean, his career was on the wane, still young enough. And this is the point I want to make. He's still young enough to still be playing for a good team on a regular basis and being important, I think. Mm. When you see him play, it's been a long time. He's paid for being that player that was versatile. Atletico. But when I think back to when he was a regular midfield player for Atletico Madrid and he was linked with big clubs in England, I'm thinking, Atletico, I'm never sell him. Mm. And it's going to cost a fortune for a big club to take him away from Atletico. Why would you let him go? To the extent that his career sort of dissipated and then he went on loan to Chelsea and that didn't work out. It's a surprise to see him back at Atletico. It has been since he returned. It's a case of there isn't anywhere for him because other clubs will look at it now, particularly in the Premier League. None of the big clubs in the Premier League are going to take him again because of what happened. He's not the first player to suffer that with an ill-fated move to the Premier League that doesn't work out and then he's written off. But in my opinion, at his age, he's still good enough to show some finding a level of club for him. And there's rumours that he wants to be playing more. And I get it. Let's go. At one stage, he was an £80 million player, and now they're struggling to know what to do with him. To the extent his contract will run out, and he'll leave in a free at some stage. Mm-hmm. But there was a time, wasn't there, where they were doing well in Europe and playing in Champions League final. He was an important player. And there was a time when you thought, no, people can't afford him. You know, outstanding football. So I want to see him recover and play. Maybe go to a Valencia or something and play
on a free. I'll level. See if I can find his way. Any idea what his wages are? Is he paid a lot? Probably is, isn't he?
I think he probably is. But I wouldn't imagine it's out of the question for him in terms of even a La Liga club. A Real Sociedad or something, taking him and then sharing the wages and stuff like that. I think it did sign a long contract.
No, this isn't good news in terms of getting him out. Right, according to Capology, he's paid €230,000 per week. €230,000 a week and until June 2026. I mean, that... I've mentioned this notion of the wages trap before. What do you do about that? That's awkward, isn't it?
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about that. I mean, if you share the wages, so say you get 60,000 of that paid by Real Sociedad or Valencia or a Seville, then you're still shelling out 200,000 a week for a player that you're not using. Yeah. So that is bad news.
Yes.
I didn't think it was going to be that high, I must admit. Till 2026, did you say?
Yeah. So I don't know when he signed that. I'll tell us about the game. Well, I'll Wikipedia and I'll see if I can find when he signed that contract.
Exactly as you'd expect. Osasuna were up and at it. Their supporters at the end showed their appreciation. They're just short of an Atletico Madrid. And an Atletico Madrid had to be at their best. And they're pleasing on the eye, Atletico. I know it's easy to slag them off about the way they play, the amount of players they get back behind the ball. But some of their fundamentals I admire, but then also that their quick passing, one-touch passing from the back to the front, at times is as good as anybody. It really is. The little triangles they play. And it's not two and three touches where it's quite slow and laborious. It's one touch. The movement off the ball, they must do a lot of work in training in terms of that quick progress. The goal against Real Madrid in the Copa del Rey midweek is an absolute work of art. It is up, back, wide, through, you know, players' movement, third man runs, players spinning and players coming short. And it's about six players involved with three players touching the ball and all playing one-touch football. And it is really tough. So they played well against Real Madrid in this game. Again, they restricted Osasuna to very few chances. Atletico to be at their best. It was a big win, a good win. With a really well, I love the Rodrigo that Paul gives him something different. He's willing to. He's the one player that wants to play the ball in behind, and it was a lovely ball over the top. Late run from Sal from midfield, kept himself on the side, chest control, and right foot finish. So, I think it was a really good performance from Atletico. Yeah. It's a good win, big performance, and you know they played well.
Good finish worth 230k a week on the July 2017. He signed a 9-year contract on 230k.
I do remember it was ridiculously long.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because at the time, like you say, you know, we were rating him as one of the best young midfielders around and all of that. And you know, and you think, oh, well, he'll be there for years to come, and he will be now, isn't it? Because he's that contract. Yeah, it's interesting because it hasn't. I mean, it's his bank. I'm sure he's a very wealthy. Well, he is a very wealthy man, but hasn't done his contract, his season, his career that much good, has it? Because when it goes stale for you, you should, as a player, move on, shouldn't you? You should want to move on. But like you say, you can't go. Very few clubs can pay that kind of money.
You know. I probably only Barcelona in that division. Is he a Barcelona player? Probably not,
really.
Not one they're going to be desperate
for. Not when we're talking about Zubimendi. No. I'll look at how much Zubimendi's paid a week, and what will it be? Have a guess. Oh, it'll be a fraction.
30.
Yeah. I'll have a look. Well, you can tell us about Valladolid 1, Valencia 0. 91st minute goal by, did you say Kyle? He's a Canadian.
Yes, it is. Kyle, I think so.
Yeah.
I did panic. how do you pronounce this? One of our issues. Yeah. But I did hear Kyle, just spelt with a C rather than a K.
And Valencia, I mean, they drew on Monday, which we haven't discussed with podcast listeners. But they're, like I say, you know, quietly, he's doing a terrible job, Gattuso, isn't he? Sort of sneaking up on you. Hang on, they're in trouble.
If we had any doubt, did you hear his interview after the game?
Oh, yeah. Well, he
just kept saying, we're in trouble. We're in trouble. Apparently, I don't know if it was lost in translation, but he just kept repeating it. I'm thinking, I might have to go. And I'm thinking, they don't need much convincing at Valencia. And if you keep saying, I might need to go, I might need to get the sack, and we're in trouble. If you keep saying that, repeating that, you're in trouble. And when you look at the league table, the position that we're in, the position they were in before the World Cup, where we were talking in a positive manner about Valencia, I wasn't convinced. I have to be honest. I thought it rankled with me that I thought Bordalás's job last season went unappreciated, because even a year ago, Valencia were in a bigger mess than they are now.
Yeah,
and he stopped the decline, but it wasn't enough. The style of play wasn't enough for the supporters, wasn't enough for the media, it wasn't enough for the club.
So therefore, they
went for a sexier name in Gattuso and to trying to, you know, play a different style.
The clash between the reality of the money that hasn't been spent on Valencia in the last more than five, how many years? 10? Since that flurry when Peter Lim first came in, there was a flurry of spending.
Yeah.
Since then, nothing has been spent on the club. Has it?
Interesting. I'm going to look and see what their last big signing was.
So if you compare,
it's no one in the team now, is it?
No. So the image of Valencia still. We all, you know, I mean, all the kids might have a different view of this. Now we at our age still think of Valencia as this sort of sexy big football club that can achieve big things. The reality of where they are, they need a Bordalás. But no one wants that.
Yeah,
it's you know, there are clubs all over the place like this, and you look at the reality of where they are. You need a hardworking coach who's going to sort it out, organize, grind out some results. That's what you need, but it doesn't match your self image.
No, and it's exactly what they need, and they're sliding. And I must admit, in the first half of the season before the World Cup, people were waxing lyrical about Gattuso and their Valencia team. And I wasn't convinced. And I was thinking, I don't know. I know this is a fallout of he's supposed to be different and better to Bordalás. But I wasn't convinced, even when they were picking up some results and they were looking in the top half of the table and looking upwards rather than downwards. I wasn't convinced that was the case. And I was thinking, I wanted to see more evidence than an initial up turning form because it's Gattuso and it's a big name and the supporters get behind him. It's more interesting, more exciting than maybe Bordeaux. And that was the sort of, I wanted to see more proof that Valencia were going to be a lot different. There were signs, but they weren't winning the points and games that a Valencia team should. And now they're on this slippery run of form, which has led them to drop. I mean, they're getting away with it in terms of where you look at the league, they're 14th. But when you look at the bottom half of the table, next week they could be in the bottom three. And they play Real Madrid on Thursday night.
Yeah.
Away from home. And the way that the manager was talking. And it's hard because he hasn't been backed in terms of transfer fees paid, but they've worked hard, the club, to bring in some new players and loan and stuff like that. And Cavani coming in will be a decent investment by the club in terms of salary and stuff like that. Castillejo's coming as a player. He obviously knew from Italy that returned back to Spanish football. Lino's a good signing as well. The product is there, but I wasn't convinced, and I'm far from convinced now that he knows a different method to try and arrest this decline, because it's the same formation every week, pretty much the same players every week, and we're getting the same outcome every week now. So it's a worry that, as I say, they go to the Bernabeu on Thursday. That's their game in hand. And at the moment, I mean, normally Real Madrid, Valencia, think, oh, it's still will be a good game. Please, don't get me wrong. It's on ITV in the UK. But it's a game where last night you're looking at Real Madrid, Real Sociedad, you knew that was going to be tight. If Real Madrid play like they did last night, Valencia play like they have been playing, this could be an emphatic victory for Real Madrid. So they need to do something different. And he needs to do a Bordeaux. He needs to make them tighter defensively. In this game, there's been a lot of issues as well this year about the younger. That's what I would give. I think there's a more younger team.
Yeah.
They have lost important players in recent years. I mean, Carlos Soler and Guedes have left the club recently. They've had some issues with who plays up front. They thought they'd solved that with Cavani coming in. Maxi Gomez never really fulfilled his potential. But they do need to do something where you think, oh, he can do something to tactically change. It's always four at the back and three up front, three in midfield. Maybe at the Bernabeu, play an extra central defender. Play some more defensive-minded players in midfield if you've got them. Don't be so open in terms of 4-3-3, make the pitch big, let's play out the back, let's play. Can he do that? Is he capable? Has he got the players? Is it, capabilities in the squad to actually turn Valencia around, arrest this decline by being hard to beat again? Because they're not. And there's been a lot of criticism about they ran out of steam in the second half of matches. I haven't looked at the stats and the details, but again, this was another late goal conceded, and perhaps that's becoming a thing.
Yeah, which doesn't match them being so young, does it? You wouldn't have thought naive, but they are. I looked that up. Valencia are the youngest squad in La Liga, or the youngest playing time. So, reality, if you get sent out of the pitch by a mile, by an absolute mile, they're younger. By an average of nearly 2 years per player younger than Real Sociedad, who are second. And then Barcelona third, oldest. Oldest is shared between Sevilla and Cadiz in terms of being old squads. And I've looked up, Terry, Zubimendi's wages. A bit more than you thought, but 57,000 euros a week. And he's on a contract till 2027. So in terms of getting him away, it's going to be hard to get him away. But that price compared to what Saul is earning, what is off the top of my head, nearly six times as much. No, that's bad maths. Four times as much. It's quite significant, isn't it? Shall we crack on? Sevilla won. Now it was against Elche, and old Pedro Bigas doesn't like to do a full 90-minute shift.
This just sums up Elche. Yeah. They keep shooting them. They can't have any feet left to shoot, surely, because, again, in this game, They're not useless, and I keep saying this. They must be. I know. I must be wrong. But I keep looking at them and thinking. Every time I see them play, they're not useless. Mm. We have had some useless teams in La Liga. Levante weren't one of them last year either.
Mm.
And yet we have this unbelievable situation of Elche replicating what Levante did last year. Levante last year, looking at them, thinking they've lost again, but they're not useless. We've had some useless teams in La Liga, and I really don't mean. I don't want to start naming them, but. And they've got more points than Levante had at this stage, that Elche have got at this stage. And yet they were getting turned over 8-0 and 10-0 by Barcelona and Real Madrid. And that's when you look at them and think, they're useless. How are they going to stay up? But they accumulated 35 points. They got half a dozen wins, just went down. Mm-hmm. And some of them have been useless. Yeah, Elche are not useless, but they just keep making stupid mistakes. But he has, the ball goes across. He's in his own half. It's one of those centre-backs, full-back playing it back to the across the pitch. And the ball goes under his feet and he just panics and just rugby tackles the player down. And that's his second red card in his last three matches.
Only squeeze one game in between.
and from then on, and all the action happened at that period of the game. He got sent off. They were 2-0 down. And then, they were 1-0 down and Nesri had scored. He gets sent off on the 41st minute. And in 45 plus 3, 43, Acuna scored. And then 3 minutes into added on time in the first half. And Nesri gets his second. And Nesri, one of his, the highlights clip of Nesri, when he jumps and leaps and you put a decent cross into the box, there's no one better.
Mm.
There literally is no one better at him at attacking that sort of delivery into the penalty box. It was a 9-foot jump, wasn't it? He did in the World Cup. This must have been very, very similar, very close. And he's a skillful header of the ball as well. His technique is really good. But so Elche just keep doing stupid mistakes. But Sevilla, look at Pat Baer now. And Sevilla not out of trouble by any means. I mean, they've climbed up to 13th. They're out of the relegation zone. They look high up in the table. They're not. They're one of those that are too clear of the relegation zone. But when you look at them, all they needed to do is not, as I said, last week's podcast, it's not going to be the season they hoped for. They're still in Europe, still in the Europa League, so that might give them some consolation. They went out to Copa del Rey last week to Osasuna. They're not going to finish in the European spots, but it just needed someone as opposed to what they've got in Sampdoria. You look at it now and you think you just needed someone to say that, in a way, not exactly like this, but for God's sake, just calm down. Look at the quality we got. Let's just calm down. Let's play our football. Let's get everyone sharp. Let's get everyone back from the World Cup. Let's group together and we will win. Sevilla will not go down. I promise you, they will not go down. I will guarantee that because they'll win another 6 or 7 games. They won't play as bad again in the second half of the season where they practically didn't win a game at home. They've only done that recently. They'll win another 6, 7, 8 games this season out in the second half. So 19 games left, they'll win 7 or 8 of those. And it just needed everybody to calm down. So this another win will help them climb the table. When you look at all the teams involved in the relegation battle, I know Sevilla won't go down, but they didn't know that for a while, did they? They were playing as if they were with 3 games to go. We need to win all 3. And we've got to score in the first 10 minutes of every game and panic, the panic situation. It took a while. It will take a while for them to get used to not being involved in the race for last year, a year ago, the title, the race for Champions League. The mindset has got to be completely different, but it needs to be, they need to calm down and show their quality, far too much quality. And then they're not playing rubbish now. They're getting somewhere back to par. And if they continue to do that, building a little bit of confidence, they'll climb up the table. They'll accumulate more than enough points. They'll be Sevilla this year. They got 21 points. A dreadful first half of the season. They'll get hit 50. They'll hit 50 points this year. 50 points plus Sevilla will get. That's my prediction this season and be nowhere near getting relegated. But someone needed to tell them that 2-3 weeks ago.
Yes. Someone write that down. Remind us of it.
The sporting director running around the pitch like he's 10 minutes away from firing Sampaoli and 10 minutes away from getting the sack himself. Sampaoli going absolutely berserk on the touchline. It looks ridiculous and it is ridiculous. So dreadful first half of the season, but I'm going to stick with it. 50 points.
Right.
I'm
going to
go 55 points.
55? 55.
Yeah.
Hang on. If this is the Gibson bookmakers are open, I think I'm taking you. So hang on. They've got 21 points now. They're halfway. So you're predicting another 34 points from 19 games.
Yeah.
I think that's
nothing for severe, is it?
That's quite good. So 30. Hang on. Normal... Who's got 34 points? Who's got 34 points now? Because I think so. That is Atleti. They've got 34 points from 19 games. So your prediction is that they'll recreate Atleti's
form. 52.
Right, okay. Yeah.
52.
Yeah. We don't do betting tips, but I am saying.
Atleti's form ain't great.
Yeah.
Stuff hasn't been
but
great.
They're better than Sevilla.
I get what you mean
about the whole reversion to the norm, as in they've massively underperformed and they should be performing at, you know, 30 points or something like that. So the chances are they'll just go back to being more normal and be a fair few points clear of relegation at the end of the season. I'll buy that, but if you're offering odds on 55 points.
I'm going to 52.
Right, okay. Okay. Remember that, somebody, and remind us at the end of the season to check back in. So we're at halfway point. It's a good point, actually, after Thursday, it's halfway, isn't it? Because there's catch-up games in midweek, aren't they, from the...
Yeah, four teams.
From the genius Super Copper. Thanks, Gerard Piqué, for that. Thanks. Right. Right, let's round up the rest. Getafe, 0. Real Betis, 1. Handball, actually, which I don't mind. Maybe, like you say, we're in a place where we think everything's a handball now. Actually, this one I don't mind. I forget who it was now.
Domingos Duarte.
Yes, yeah, that's it. Yep. But he's
unlucky. Yeah, he's unlucky.
He knows he's in trouble because he tries to hide his arm behind his back, and like that. Oh, that's what I should have done. You know, but you didn't. Your hand was out, and it hit your hand. So if we're giving handballs for all the other stuff that we're giving handballs for now, that's this by comparison is an obvious handball. Statistically, damn lies and all that. The best finishers in La Liga, Getafe, versus the worst finishers in Betis. Now, obviously, Getafe are now second bottom, which therefore says they don't create any chances. The strikers actually can finish a chance, but they create next to nothing.
And that's a problem. And even supporters at Getafe, they're jeering their own players, jeering the manager. He's under pressure. It'd be interesting to see if he lasts the week.
Yeah,
because this might be when you panic, when you suddenly, other teams in that part of the league have won games this weekend, and all of a sudden Getafe is second from bottom. And that would be interesting to see what happens this week. The January transfer window we closed, I don't think it's going to have a major impact on the
decision.
That's
more of a reason to change now, because the new guy can't demand anything.
Yeah, so it's an issue, as it is for a lot of teams. But in this was a hard watch, I have to be honest. Betis are far from their best. And struggled to this victory. It could have gone either way. You can make an argument that Getafe probably might have just shaded it. Betis played the more eye-catching football, but didn't create much. And it was a dramatic end to the game. 86-minute penalty from Borja Iglesias tucked away. That was the difference. So much-needed win for Betis. Getafe, as you say, Carlos Celeño and Mayoral up front, just get the service and the supply to those two. They're not. That's the problem.
Mm.
You know, they're three at the back, but it's a five at the back because the wing backs don't really push forward. So it's interesting to see what Kike Sanchez throws. I think he could leave out one of the centre backs put another added additional player into a midfield, into a wide attacking position. Same as I said about Gattuso, try something different in terms of tactics. Same with Getafe, I think they need to come up with something. They've lost their identity that they had 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
They're not as hard to play against. Actually, they're quite dull, to be honest, in the fact that, as you said, they don't create much for the two quality strikers that they have.
Yeah. And again, Bordalas was, rubbish. Get rid of him. Boring. Fouling. You know, all of that negative stuff. But
I think that was from everyone else's supporters, not Getafe.
Yeah,
that was their identity, and they enjoyed it. I think he went off to seek a bigger, a more, you know, exciting challenge with a bigger club. His efforts deserved that probably at that time. So Getafe, I don't think their supporters were desperate for a change. They did have one difficult season, but they've lost their identity. They just look a normal football team with three at the back or five at the back and not very exciting, and missing Aaron Barry in midfield. He livens them up. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. They're in trouble, Getafe, like 11 other clubs.
Yep, precisely. Bottom half of the league. Cadiz then, therefore, had a good win. Only second home win of the season for Cadiz. And Teobon Gonda, who they paid quite a lot of money for, actually, with a goal. And it hasn't, you know, in common.
Like what?
Apparently €6 million they paid for.
Oh, wow.
But I know, yeah, all right. It's not Chelsea.
No, I know.
Yeah, but for Cadiz, it's a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree. Do you know they lost their first five and didn't score a goal?
Yeah,
so they're
yeah.
handicapped. So they've got 19 points in the last 14 games. Mm. So I'm still looking at results like this and think, oh, Cadiz, but no, they're not bad now. They've settled down after a disastrous start to the season, absolutely disastrous, and look decent now. It's still going to be a battle right to the very end. For them to stay up, and I wouldn't like to predict whether they do or not, but their recent form has been really good. Been hard to beat. They've drawn a lot of games, started with a solid base after going five games without scoring and losing every one, and you thought they could easily have been Elche, but they turned things around. As you said, one of the oldest squads in the league, and Negredo was a 37-year-old Negredo was important in, he was the player who crossed it for Van Gundy.
Yeah.
And was important in this game. So Sergio knows what he's doing. Plenty of experience. He seems to have been down there since he's been a La Liga manager, first with Valladolid and now Cadiz. I can't remember a team of his being higher than sixth from bottom.
Interesting to look at his win. We'll have a look at his win percentage in his career. Yeah.
But at least he knows how to this battle.
Yeah.
We know how to try and overcome this battle. Of course, Vidalib went down with him as manager, but he's got some experience of it, as opposed to someone like Sampaoli or Gattuso or something. Oh, well, I'm panic. You know, I'm in trouble. We're in trouble, Gattuso and Sampaoli going berserk every game. At least he knows, he held his nerve after going five games without scoring and five games losing. Probably was hanging on to a thread, his job. But they're turning it around slowly but surely.
We've got Villarreal, Rayo Vallecano, Monday night. You might have missed that already, depending on when you're listening to us. Betis, Barca, and then Real Madrid, Valencia, coming up midweek, and then we're at the halfway point. The game of the weekend was Friday night. Almeria 3, Espanyol 1. I mean, I'm sort of probably bigging that up because Espanyol's goal came in the 93rd minute, didn't it? A guy who we've discussed a lot, who keeps banging him in, Hossolu, is on 11. Now, he's only two behind Lewandowski. Given that Espanyol have struggled, that's a remarkable effort. And actually, we talk about, you know, this issue that there's quite a few teams in La Liga that are quite a hard watch. Almeria, I wouldn't put in that category. So I think they're one of the more enjoyable teams to watch.
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think Ruby, they're doing a good job. Ruby, again, has picked up the experience along the way. Mm. And I like it watching Almeria. Robert Tony in midfield is good. Sammy Costa is good in midfield as well. El Touré is a handful up front, and then the three goal scorers in this will recognise La Liga players. Luis Suarez, not the Luis Suarez, but the other one, the younger version, Leo Baptistao, and Francisco Portillo, who's a player I've always liked, and a good solid, he's in his well into his 30s now. Scored the week before against Valencia as well, so suddenly he's burst into life, and they're a good team. Again, they're still going to be involved in the thick of the action, though, in terms of Gijoni, that slippery slope of half a dozen, as we're seeing with some of the teams like Valencia now, you think you're away from it. So Mallorca are involved in this. They got beat by Cadiz. They look well away from, when you look at the league table, a 10th, 25 points. It's not beyond them. They've done well this first half of the season. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that they go four or five games without a win, pick up a couple of points, and all of a sudden they're dragged back into it. Javier Aguirre has said that. He's made that clear. So everybody's looking over their shoulder. But Almeria have got to keep this positivity up to give themselves a chance and staying up. But they've got decent players and an ever-improving manager. And they're a decent watch, Almeria.
I might dig out the predictions when we get to the halfway stage on Thursday from the start of the campaign, see who's overperformed and see who's underperformed. I'm trying to remember. I mean, it's hard to say because there's so the whole bottom half is so congested that, you know, you could look again in a couple of weeks and it'll look radically different. Obviously, Elche have underperformed because they're going to break all records of being terrible.
I guess Barcelona have, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah. But quite a few Barcelona fans had them. You know, there was, it wasn't, I thought I made Real Madrid fairly strong favourites at the start of the season. Obviously changed that now. But there was quite a bit of optimism among Barca fans. It'd be interesting to hear from Barca fans. Feel free to get in touch with us. Is this what you expected from your team? You know, that's the thing, isn't it? When all those attacking names and they're all going to sort out the front of the team and all of that. I mean, obviously, you take it. If you're going to win the league, you take it. I think everyone...
Well, what I would say about the game at the weekend, John, is that they didn't create many chances. Mm. They looked a little bit blunt up front, if I'm being honest. Fatty is still finding it hard to find the rhythm. Probably his best position would be wide without the responsibility of playing with his back to goal and being the focal point in the attack with Lewandowski and Ferran Torres missing. So they had to keep that clean sheet because they weren't going to score a lot of goals in this game. We haven't seen them reach the heights of that game against Real Madrid in the Super Cup, where the best I've seen Barcelona play for a long time.
Yeah.
In terms of not just the best result, but the way they moved the ball and the classic Barcelona. And since that, they've struggled. They haven't played anything like that. So it's what I would say is Lewandowski coming back from suspension is he played in the Super Cup against Real Madrid. It's a huge miss. There are some teams about where you're thinking, well, if he's missing, they're in trouble. And if Barcelona do miss Lewandowski again for a period of time, that's going to make life difficult for them because I don't see an alternative. Lewandowski to Fatty, maybe Ferran Torres, it's not a like for like. And I'm not just talking about quality, I'm talking about in terms of style of play. So at the weekend, crossing balls was a waste of time, to be honest. Yeah. So Lewandowski's they've just about got away with it in his absence.
Right, Thursday night, if you want to watch on ITV4, that's definitely in the UK. I don't know about Ireland anymore because apparently the Fire Play has broken off Ireland now. So the Irish people have different options slightly random options as to what you get to watch, which is a bit frustrating, I think, because there's been a long-standing big La Liga community in Ireland, but I think it's a bit frustrating at the moment. I don't know. Let me know if you get ITV4 there, but it's on in the UK this weekend. Enjoy your football wherever. We're getting to the halfway point, and we'll be back with another podcast soon. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you soon.